Hello, welcome to the Higher Education Researcher. This is a podcast by the Center for Higher Education Research and Evaluation at Lancaster University. My name is Janja Komljenović. Today we are recording a somewhat different episode, which is to celebrate 25 years of our doctoral program in higher education research. I'm hosting two very special guests, Dr. Anne-Marie Houghton and Dr. Jan McArthur, who are both current staff members at the Educational Research Department in Lancaster. Both teach on the program and are themselves alumni of the program. How special is that? We will have a conversation about the program as an introduction to the webinar series in September, which we are organizing to celebrate the anniversary in the times of travel restriction and the pandemic. We were looking forward to hosting this face-to-face, but now we have moved that in the online world. Welcome, Jan, and welcome, Anne-Marie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So just before we start, I will say a few words about the program. We call it DEEPER in its acronym that stands for Doctoral Program in Educational Research, Higher Education. It was one of the first doctoral programs in the field of higher education research in the world, actually. And since its inception, it was designed so that doctoral researchers remain employed in their work environment while traveling to Lancaster for regular residential sessions. So it was dedicated for people who were already employed in the higher education sector, but that's very broadly conceived. It was designed to support students to undertake rigorous research into the higher education context in which they work and also more broadly. Here at the department, we are incredibly proud of the program and the achievements of its alumni. And throughout 25 years, 137 doctoral researchers have graduated from the program. 30 academics have contributed to the teaching, and more than 40 guests came from other universities as guest lecturers. Throughout 25 years, it had 5 program directors, myself being the current one, and Ms. Alison Sedgwick has played a key role as a program coordinator throughout this time. So she's the only person who stayed on the program for the whole 25 years, actually. Today, DEEPER has 77 current students, and while the program is so well established in the form of residentially based approach, the DEEPER team decided to respond to the current pandemic crisis by moving the program online. So the next cohort, 26, who are starting in January 2021, will go through the program entirely online. We do plan to go back to the residentially based program for the cohort starting in January 2022, if everything will go well and we'll be able to do so. The program is also associated with the Center for Higher Education Research and Evaluation at Lancaster University, which offers a rich research culture for the DEEPER students. And we organize research seminars, workshops, conferences, host guests from other universities and practice, and include students more broadly in our activities. DEEPER students and alumni can present their research in our podcast, this one, Higher Education Researcher, and also publish in our working paper series. So that's enough about the program. And now it's my pleasure to move to the conversation with Jan and Anne-Marie. Few words about them. Jan is a senior lecturer at the Educational Research Department at Lancaster University. And her research interests span over two themes, that is education and social justice, which logically culminates into the nature of higher education. And Anne-Marie is a teaching fellow at the same department, that is Educational Research Department at Lancaster University, with research interests in widening access and inclusive teaching and learning. She is also the Dean for Equality, Diversity and Inclusion across the university. And I think you're the first person in this role, aren't you, Anne-Marie?
I am indeed, yes. And it's something that's grown out, I suppose, of my research, which is, and my teaching interests. So that's been really interesting, exciting, particularly in these times.
Yeah, congratulations. Okay, so let's start. Since you're both alumni of this program, let's just start at the beginning of your journeys and how you started interacting with it. And I'm just curious, what motivated you to enroll onto this program in the first place? Jan, would you like to start?
Okay. Well, I used to work with Professor Ray Land, who is very famous for the idea of threshold concepts. And Ray was actually part of cohort one of this program. And it was clear that it had an enormous transformational impact on him. And my boss at the time was very keen for me to also do the Lancaster program. But strangely enough, I was initially reluctant. I had set my sights on a traditional PhD at a famous university, I won't name it. But before telling my boss that I didn't want to do this Lancaster thing, I thought it was only polite to have a look on the website and see the details of what I didn't want to do. Well, I can still remember sitting in my office and looking at the program website, and I was absolutely blown away by the structure of the program. And I saw that being a non-traditional PhD didn't mean less rigor. It actually opened up amazing opportunities to engage with a range of fantastic educational researchers. And also the publish-as-you-go approach was really important to me because I was building my academic career at the time.
Thank you. That's really interesting. Anne-Marie, would you like to share your story?
Yes, indeed. It's interesting because I'd never really envisaged doing a PhD, you know, from a child, shall we say. But I remember when I started working at the university, I'd got an MA and I was working in what was our continuing education department for a group called the Community Access Programme, which was then moved into the Department of Educational Research. And at that stage, I had opportunities to teach within the programme and felt that actually I really did want to pursue the idea of a PhD. So set about trying to explore where or what I might do. The challenge for me in terms of the traditional route, so I was interested to hear what you said, Jan, but the challenge for me for the traditional route was I couldn't quite work out which way I wanted to go. I think if you look at my research career, you'll see that I've been involved in lots of different things. And I think that that uncertainty or curiosity for lots of things has continued. Anyway, I was therefore, when I was looking at programmes, looked at our own programme within the department. And I was very much attracted to the fact that it had the three modules, core modules, which would allow me to be able to explore a range of issues that I would then perhaps hopefully be able to work out what I was going to do when I moved into the part two phase of the programme. But we'll perhaps say more about that a little later. So I think for me, the decision was it was going to be very convenient. It was within the department, but it was also going to give me the opportunity of having breadth and perhaps helping me to decide. One thing I didn't anticipate, however, which I think is somewhat amusing, was that as and when I started submitting my coursework, my coursework was being submitted at the time to colleagues. Although at the time I approached the situation very much as a student. Of course, like any student, once you've submitted your work, you then start lurking around corners thinking, are they going to mention your coursework in the course of another situation? So yes, I remember sort of having some interesting times of when was I meeting colleagues as a student and when was I meeting them as a member of staff? And that was an interesting but fascinating part of my journey, I say.
What's an interesting situation you were in, Anne-Marie, and also very indicative of these different identities that we have and the roles that we have. quite different journeys. Jan, you were employed somewhere else and came into this program, while Anne-Marie, you were actually part of the staff member at the department doing the program. That's really fascinating to hear about it. I wasn't aware of that, by the way.
Well, there we are. We're sharing all sorts of secrets.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm quite curious, what surprised you most when you first came on the program? You know, you decided you're going to start, and Anne-Marie, I'd suggest we start with you, because you were somewhat familiar with the program since you were the staff member already, you knew the people. Were you surprised by anything at all when you started?
I think there were probably two things that most surprised me. The first one was we had the morning induction, and at the time, it was Professor Oliver Fulton, and he was talking to us about the programme, and he asked the open question, you know, what's the purpose of a PhD? Obviously a room full of people, and so what was the purpose? And people called out different points, and somebody said, it qualifies you to teach. And I nearly started laughing, because I'd never envisaged that the PhD would qualify me to teach. Now, my background was that I trained as a primary school teacher, so I had a teaching qualification, and I didn't see this association as closely as I would now. I still don't know that the PhD qualifies you to teach, but I think it can enhance and certainly enrich your teaching. So I think that was the first thing. Thankfully, I didn't laugh out loud and managed to contain myself, which was probably a good thing. But the second thing I think that surprised me about the programme was the importance of the cohort and the importance of getting to know and meeting such a wide range of colleagues, all of whom were working in a professional context, as you explained, Janja. In my case, there were a couple of people who were in further education, teaching higher education, but the rest were all within higher education institutions. And I think that that was a really rich and valuable source of support during the programme and since. And I can see now, and we'll perhaps get back to that later, but I can see now as an educator on the programme, I think one of the richnesses is the fact that the students do have a chance to learn from one another as much as they learn from us.
Yes, thank you very much, Anne-Marie. Jan, would you like to share your thoughts?
Well, I'll just pick up on the last point first about the cohort. I think that really is a strength of the program, and it was a lovely feeling to be part of a cohort. And it's very difficult, let's be perfectly honest about this, it's difficult to study and work, often full time, and probably have family and life and elderly parents and all sorts of things. So the cohort provided an enormous form of support, as well as intellectual breadth. It also was great fun, because in the days of residentials, we would gather in the university residences and make spaghetti bolognese and drink red wine and talk about life, the world and the universe. And it was just lovely for all of us. But I suppose the other thing that really surprised me when I started was just how exciting so many of the ideas in academic literature was. You know, I had sort of thought that this would be something worthy that I had to do, but it was just so interesting and exciting. And as Anne-Marie said, because you have the three core modules and they're all quite different, have different personalities and different literature and different theories, and then you have the two supporting modules, the tapestry created by those five modules is incredibly rich. And I think what I found, the other thing I found was that I knew the staff would be really professional. Well, I assumed they would, and they were, but they were just so kind and friendly, and each in a very different way. But right from the start, I felt that my PhD mattered to them. And now as a staff member, that for me is my mission, each and every student, that their PhD matters to me. And my colleagues. The final thing I'd say that links to the idea of how exciting it was is that the realm of educational research showed itself to be so broad that there were no limits on what we could explore. We weren't having to trod a well-worn path and do just as everyone else had done before us. We were encouraged to follow our own interests. And in my case, that took me back to my first degree in political theory, which I thought I'd left long behind. And it was a wonderful experience to re-engage with some of the theoretical ideas from decades ago and see their relevance to today. And for me, it was just a roller coaster of exciting ideas.
I would just like to sort of pick back up on what Jan was saying. That I really like that image of a tapestry, Jan, because I think that I think I can really sort of relate to that. And I think the way in which the modules interact and the fact that people can bring what they want as individuals to those modules, and there is considerable flexibility and therefore synergy, which is also very interesting. And that final point of perhaps touching back with something that you've been doing previously, I mentioned I started the program not really knowing what I was going to perhaps do for my thesis for part two, and I think people approach the program differently. Some people will be very clear about their areas of interest. I just recently supervised a student who had a whole series of project the core module assignments that were all interlinked, and then they then use those as the foundation for what they've then built on in their thesis. For me, I did completely different things, but what was interesting for the part two thesis was that I ended up doing something that was touched on some research that I'd done previously, that had actually been earlier work and which I thought I'd sort of finished with, and yet actually allowed myself to be able to come in a very different way and think about it in a very different way because of all the new ideas that I'd been given as a result of the first, you know, the part one of the program with all the core modules and the support modules, which I also found to be tremendously useful. So tapestry, I'll be taking that with me, Jan. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, and also just adding on this, this idea that all of the research work from everybody matters. Thank you very much, Jan, for saying it so nicely. I now being the program director and also teaching stuff on the program, I actually feel the whole team kind of works this way and benefits from the synergies, as Anne-Marie also highlighted. So it seems that this culture of the program persists in time. So actually, my next question to you would be, we didn't really mention when you did your PhD, so which cohorts were you actually members of? And you've already now talked a little bit about your experience in the program as students. So I'm curious, you know, when did you actually do your PhDs, if you're happy to share that? And how has your view of the program or sense of the program or the way you feel changed with when you moved to the role of an academic on the program? So, you know, you've been the student, you had a particular kind of idea of it, and now you're a staff member. So did your view change in any way or not? And if not, why not? You know, what are your thoughts? Jan, would you like to go first?
Okay, so by my estimate, I think I must have started on the program about 14 years ago. I was in cohort 10, which I wear proudly as a badge. Anyone who's been on the program finds that we do identify ourselves very much with a cohort number. I, like a lot of students though, because of the pressures of work and family, I had to take a little bit of time out in the middle, which the program is flexible and allows you to do that. which meant that when I rejoined with a different cohort. So I also have greater affection for cohort 12. But then I hurried up and finished quite quickly. And so I graduated with cohort 10 again. But so cohort 10 and 12. And again, but that idea that when I had to come back, they were very sensitive about how to place me in a cohort and support me with a new group of people. And it was lovely. I felt like I got the benefit of two cohorts of interesting people to work with. In terms of how I've changed my view moving from being a student to a teacher, I find this really challenging because it's probably clear I absolutely loved this program as a student. I mean, it is a highlight of my life. And I know that sounds a real exaggeration, but it is just sincerely the truth. So what I have to be careful of as a teacher is that I don't view the program as it has to stay preserved just as I experienced it, because we have new students with new interests and new challenges. So it has to be a program that develops. And yet, as you've already highlighted, Yanya, I think there are some core values in the program, such as putting our students first, such as open intellectual inquiry, which do endure and are worth preserving, but being open to change. I suppose the other thing that I so enjoyed, the freedom to pursue my research in ways that interested me, which led me to do a very unusual thesis because it was purely conceptual, which is unusual. And while the department said, "Oh, that's odd," they all supported me completely because they knew I didn't do it on purpose. I just was driven by what interested me. I pursued the ideas that interested me, but I had nothing but support for that. And again, that's what I try and do, and other colleagues all try and do with our students. But now I'm a teacher, I realize it's quite a challenge. You know, we always have to be thinking about how are we genuinely ensuring that our students see that they've got a whole world to explore, the broadest possible canvas, and yet we're there to support them doing it. So I suppose the biggest change is being on the other side of the equation. I now realise how hard all my teachers had worked to support me in what I found such a great experience.
Thank you, Jan. Really interesting insights. Anne-Marie, would you like to share your thoughts and experience?
Yes. I think the move from, so I should acknowledge which cohort I was in, first of all. I was in cohort 3. So this was quite a long time ago. And I think what was very, permeated our first residential was that this was in 1997, September 1997, at the point when Princess of Wales, Princess Diana of Wales, had just died. And so this was very much a flurry of non-academic conversation during the residential. And some people were quite distressed with that and others were dismissive of it and whatever. So that was certainly a sort of a point in time, I think, both for the country and obviously for me and for cohort 3. I went through the cohort and I think if I moved through to the point of when I was going to teach on the programme, I'd done quite a lot of teaching, as I said earlier, on our undergraduate programme. We had several undergraduate programmes and I taught quite a lot on that. And as they were being finished, there was then this opportunity to be able to teach on the doctoral programme. And at the time, there was an opportunity to teach on Module B. Now, Module B is one of the support modules, and I had found it to be perhaps one of the modules where you could be creative and experiment and try things out. We'd had John Reynolds as our as the tutor, who'd been the tutor when I'd delivered the course. Excuse me. And so I was quite pleased about module B. It's what described as one of the long thin modules. So it there is an input into every residential in the first part too. I'm quite a somebody who supports and likes the idea of the cohort, as I mentioned earlier, and that idea of being able to bring people together. And so module B also has potential connectivity, or at least it did in my mind, and it has subsequently, because I've encouraged colleagues who've been on the programme to be able to sort of make some of the connections and suggest some of the things we might even think about in module B. But it connects with the core modules. And so I've sort of really enjoyed module B. I've sort of seen it as sort of creating the safe, not that any of the courses are not safe, but it's a particularly safe core home base because it runs through the full 2 years, whereas the core modules, people get the chance to see and work with a member of staff or the colleagues, perhaps like Jan, for two or three residentials, and then they move on to somebody else. So I sort of either become the old familiar face, or sort of, oh no, it's there again, or oh god, it's there again. But anyway, whichever it is, it's a chance to be able to be with the students. And I think as a result of that, I've also seen it very much as the providing the points of connectivity, and something that's grown out of. And it isn't a part of module B, it's something that I just offer, but it's something that is now seen as linked with in some ways. There are some of the PhD study days that we've been delivering, and they provide again that community cohort and support. So I think the opportunity there for being able to get to know people over the whole journey of their part one, I've really enjoyed. But I would acknowledge, with Jan, it's different being on the other side. But like Jan, I'm also keen for us to both have the continuity, but also to see about new ideas and developments. And I'm reminded of a few years ago, because I will often invite students to provide me with additional evaluation and feedback on module B so that I can develop. I'm always trying out new ideas. Some of them come from them, some of them come from me, and then I get people to offer me some feedback and things. So it's developmental. And interestingly, I'm just remembering that several people have sort of said how they've also gained some ideas for teaching and learning for themselves that they've perhaps taken back to their own practice, which I have to say has been very gratifying. But back to the ideas that have come from students participating. We had one student who had run as part of a sort of business degree program that they ran, and he introduced the idea of the beer game, and he came and we worked together, but he facilitated that, and that was great fun, because what it allowed us to be able to do was to put into practice some of the theoretical ideas that we've been talking about, such hilarity and yet such learning. And I am ever grateful to that particular student for helping with that. And it's something we've done subsequently as well, thanks to them. So, yes.
Did you say that's a beer game, Anne-Marie? Does it include beer?
It doesn't actually include beer, although whether people go and drink beer afterwards, I couldn't comment. But what it does, it's all about the buying and selling and the production and the chain line and moving along, and lots of matchsticks and lollipop sticks will be a reality, probably in lieu of the beer, but yeah. So yeah, that's right.
Okay, thank you. Jan, do you have any particular favorite memory or anecdote from the program, either as a student or as a staff?
I have a favorite memory as staff. Absolutely. It relates to a student on the very first time I taught on the program, because I've taught a little bit on each of the three core modules. So the very first time I taught, it was a big cohort, because it was a double cohort, which sometimes happens. And there was this man who was very confident and very loud, and sat at the back and made it very clear that he thought we were all talking pretentious nonsense. And he was really turned off by the language of higher education research, and especially some of the theorists we use, which I have to be honest, some of them are pretty hard work. But he never disengaged. He just kept challenging us. And, you know, sometimes a little aggressively, but not really. He was just genuinely challenging us. And so that was absolutely fine. But over time, I witnessed the most amazing transformation in him. Because he kept challenging these ideas, he came to understand them and to see the value of some of them. Some of them, quite rightly, he would never see the value of, and that's part of the program. It's a smorgasbord of choice of different theoretical perspectives. We're not saying people have to abide by anyway. But going from the point where he was the disruptive person at the back saying we were all talking pretentious nonsense, he then started to embrace theory, which is a particular passion of mine. And he came to do the most fantastic work using a very difficult theoretical framework, which I won't reveal because it would reveal him. And he did the most fantastic work. And he is now one of the loudest advocates for this program in the land. And the proudest moment of my professional life was when I saw him in his floppy hat and gown on graduation day, beaming with pride at what he'd achieved. And it was a genuine, we overuse the metaphor, but it was a genuine journey. But also it was a reminder to me to always listen to the students who disagree with you, not just the ones who agree with you, because they're also telling you really interesting things. And of course, being a teacher, and I'm sure Anne-Marie will agree with me on this, and I think all colleagues would, being a teacher is always about being a learner. So he's my favourite memory.
Absolutely, Jan. I couldn't agree more. An ongoing learning process. And I think that's one of the joys of continuing to teach in the programme. I'm also reminded of another memory, which was, I suppose, one of these madcap ideas, which was the module that you've now taken over, Janja, in terms of understanding policy and practice in higher education, UPPE. One of the other things to bear in mind in terms of this programme is they all have these acronyms, and people talk about ECOD and UPPE and ELW and RLTA and who knows what, but when you're in that group, you get to know what they are. But anyway, understanding policy and practice, and I'd got this brainwave of there are so many policies and they span over time, so I decided I'd create this timeline so I can remember the Christmas break just before the residential, where I had practically the whole length of my house was this long brown piece of paper where I was then marking out the times. And I decided I'd go back to Robbins, which is a key widening participation and widening access policy in the 60s, and had a year for every year then. And so what one of the activities the students had to do was thinking of their own policy interests, was to then come and place all their post-its and linkages and other policy documents and things that had gone on over the time, and having some really quite interesting discussions around this big policy line. And it was something that we used once, and that was my intention. But then actually, because of what the students were saying, we revisited it and talked about it and used it in another way. Because as you say, Jan, it is very much about what we can learn from our colleagues. Lots of memories like that.
It's really interesting that you both thought of anecdotes actually relating to students' work and progress. So just tells me how motivated and dedicated teachers you actually are. And I'm also curious, what do you think would be the biggest impact that the program had on your life. I mean, in general, you know, it could be professional, personal, emotional, whatever. But like, if you could sum it up in just a sentence or two, you know, what do you think, how it impacted you, if at all? Jan, would you like to go first?
Okay, well, this is easy to answer for me. Because of DEEPA, I'm in my dream job here in the Department of Educational Research at Lancaster, working with the best imaginable colleagues and fantastically interesting and diverse students. And I often say that I'm just living the dream of being a DEEPA student forever and ever. So it has been a highlight of my life and brought real happiness to my professional life. And as some of you know, I actually live in Scotland, so it was quite a strange decision to decide to work in Lancaster. But my family unanimously said to me, but you'll be so happy there. So that's the case. And I suppose the other thing, the biggest impact is it reignited my interest in critical theory, which has been a wonderful, for me, rich intellectual endeavour.
Well, how do you follow that? I think, I don't know how DEEPA has made a difference to my life. I suppose the fact is that because I acquired my PhD now a number of years ago, and if I think back to before I had it, and the self-doubt that I wouldn't be able to do it, and the fact that it was a program that enabled and facilitated me and supported me in being able to do it. And it's now a program where, in just a little way, I hope I'm able to encourage and support other people in being able to do it. It has made a big difference. And yes, so I think that's what I would say.
Great, thank you. And now we are nearing the end of our conversation, but just before we say goodbye, I'm curious if you could think of a short recommendation to any candidates out there who might be thinking whether to start deeper and apply for the program at all. Do you have any advice for them? Anne-Marie?
I think my advice would be that obviously people have to have had some previous educational experience. They have to think, as Jan said earlier, it's a challenging thing doing a PhD. But I do think that this program and the mechanisms and support structures do enable people who are working to be able to work through the challenges and engage in the opportunities and pursue their areas of interest. I think it's structured, but it offers such freedom and opportunities. I think, as we've both, Jan and I have said, and Janja in her introduction, and we hope that alumna and alumni will also attest, if you're in touch with any of them, that it is supportive and people are encouraging, and that there are lots of ways in which colleagues can be supported to move through. And I think for that reason, if you're wanting, and I think the other thing to say is that because we do in our department have different doctoral programs, and some of them are completely online, and so I think if you feel you're an online learner, that's great. There are some people for whom an online learning experience is not necessarily for them, and this residential 4 times a year experience in part one, and then support outside with things like study days or reading groups that our colleague Rebecca Marsden facilitates, and other seminars and whatever that you get access to as a part of the programme. I think it's a package. That's rather a long ramble, Janja. Apologies.
But yeah, but
there's something in there, I hope.
Thank you, Anne-Marie. Jan, what's your advice and recommendation?
I would say engage right from the start. See the core and support modules as complementary. They're both equally important, but the support ones give you a real chance to they're very low risk. So just get in there, start writing. You're in a safe place. But I think the other thing is to always treat it as a learning experience, because a lot of people think that, oh gosh, I've enrolled on a PhD and now I'm meant to be an expert in something. Well, no, you're not. That's the outcome. It's not, but this is about the process. So don't, we all at various times in our PhDs have self-doubt, but try if you can to see, give yourself the freedom to learn, the freedom to make mistakes, to try out different ideas over time. And you're in a safe, protected environment to do that, and you'll get the most out of it that way.
Great. Dr. Jan MacArthur and Dr. Anne-Marie Houghton, my very dear and wise colleagues, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and experience about the program. I really appreciate it, and I very much enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you,
Janja, and thank you, Jan. I enjoyed hearing your stories and reflections. Thank you.
Me too. I can't wait to start teaching.
Only a few days to go.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
As mentioned, this podcast is an introduction to the webinar series to celebrate 25 years of the DPRO program. The kickoff panel will be held on 2nd of September between 2 and 3 p.m. UK time. In this kickoff panel, the speakers will discuss higher education as a research field more broadly and how it has developed in time. They will reflect on the role of doctoral programs and research centers in establishing higher education as a research field. They will give an overview of where these centers and programs are today, and also of the role of the Lancaster Center and program in the field more generally. The speakers include Dr. Jelena Brankovic from Bielefeld University in Germany, who is a higher education researcher herself, as well as coordinator of the Early Career Higher Education Researchers Network and a member of the Board of Governors of the Consortium of Higher Education Researchers in Europe. The second speaker is Professor Paul Ashwin, who is head of Department of Educational Research at Lancaster University. He's past staff member on the DPRO program and is himself a higher education researcher. Professor Malcolm Tynt is a teaching staff on the program currently, past director of the program of many years, and himself researcher of the higher education field. Finally, myself, Dr. Janja Komljenović, I'm currently director of the DPRO program and higher education researcher. The first webinar to follow will be on 9th of September between 2 and 3 p.m. UK time, and it will be about the program community at the moment. So the current students and staff will share their experience and views of how it's like to be on the program. Lucy Panesari is a member of Cohort 25 and thus in her first year of the program. Francine Ryan is a member of Cohort 23 and has already progressed to Part 2. Alison Sedgwick is the DPRO coordinator, the supporting students and staff of the program and has been since the beginning. And Dr. Jan MacArthur is a current staff member as well as alumna of the program. So the speakers are really well placed to share their first-hand experience on how it is like to be on the program today and also reflect on the past. They will be able to answer any questions from the audience about the program. And the webinar is chaired by Dr. Kyunmi Lee, a lecturer at the Educational Research Department at Lancaster. Kyunmi has served as a convener for one of the modules on the program in the academic year 2019-20. And she also acts as a supervisor to some of the deeper students in Part 2 of the program. That is 9th of September between 2 and 3 p.m. UK time. The second webinar to follow is on Wednesday, 16th of September between 2 and 3 p.m. UK time, and it is about the impact of the DPRO on lives and careers of students and alumni. So actually, the program alumni will share their experience and views and particularly focus on how the program affected their careers and personal lives. The speakers had that very different careers before doing a doctorate and also pursued different careers after. So they will be able to share their views on the impact of the program from very different angles. They will also engage with the audience, so they will answer any potential questions. The speakers include Professor Veronica Bamber, Dr. Catherine Hested, Dr. Catherine O'Connell, and Dr. Simon Snowden. The webinar will be chaired by Dr. Richard Butt, who's a lecturer at the Educational Research Department in Lancaster. Richard is a member of the Center for Higher Educational Research and Evaluation, with which the program is associated. This Richard also served as a convener for one of the modules on the program in the academic year 2019-20, and is also a supervisor to deeper students in part two. The final webinar will be organized on 23rd of September between 2 and 3 p.m. UK time. And it will be about different strands of research on the program. So the webinar will showcase some of the research themes in a rich research landscape of the program. It will include a current student, that is Hugh McFall, an alumnus, Dr. Paul Kleiman, and that is Professor Paul Kleiman, and the current staff on the program, Dr. Gemma Derrick. So while the other two webinars were focused on the experience, either at the moment on the program or of alumni, so after the program, this webinar is research focused. So the speakers will engage with each other and the audience and present their research. The webinar will be chaired by Dr. Brett Bly, who is a lecturer at the Educational Research Department in Lancaster and also member of the Center for Higher Educational Research and Evaluation, with which DEEPER is associated. Brad has previously served as a convener for one of the modules on the program, and he also supervises DEEPER students on part two. The attendance on all of these webinars and the kickoff panel is free, but you need to register, and please visit our web pages to find more information and also links how to register. We are looking forward to welcoming the audience at these events. Thank you for listening.